listening to a download from theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Number 537.
Hello everyone and welcome once again to another podcast here on The Outdoors Station. 16 years ago, when I was but a slip of a lad, I started this podcast dedicated to the outdoors and self-powered travel. At the time, there were probably only two or three outdoors podcasts, which sadly only lasted a short while. But in recent years, the format has become more popular, it's evolved, and become accepted as a reliable source of quality information and entertainment, no matter your niche area of interest. This interview is the audio taken from last night's live stream with fellow podcasters Francesca Churauskis and Frankie York, hosts of the Seize Your Adventure podcast, which started a couple of years ago. It's a podcast which sets out to inspire and educate listeners about undertaking outdoor adventures with epilepsy. It is more about what can be done, assessing risks and managing expectations, than what can't be done. As you'll hear, it's also about changing the perceptions within the outdoor community of what epilepsy is and educating awareness. According to national statistics, 1 in 105 people in Britain are living with epilepsy, so it may be more common in the outdoors than you might think. As always, links and images related to the podcast can all be found over on theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Do take time to listen to Seize Your Adventure podcast whenever you are sitting next in front of your computer. There's some excellent thought-provoking conversations to be found within their library. And so, here's the conversation from last night's live stream. Don't forget, you too can join in with the conversation in the chat every Wednesday at 7 p.m. UK time on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter. All the various links can be found over on theoutdoorsstation.co.uk. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome once again to another live stream here on The Outdoor Station. And for some reason, the intro music's playing again, so I'm going to have to stop that in a second. So welcome, everybody who's watching us live, everybody who's watching the playback, and, of course, everybody who will be listening in the future on the podcasts. Once again, it's an interactive show, so do join in with some comments, or if you have any specific questions, do ask them with a capital Q. It's going to be an interesting conversation tonight. Once again, we have Rose over in the chat room. She's looking after everybody. Here we go.
Hi, everyone. Nice to have you all back again, and some regular listeners, you know, Mark Shan and Smokey. That's really good to have you with us again. Oh, and Martha.
And Martha from Canada. Great, excellent. We've got our usual crowd in. So welcome, Martha. Welcome, Mark. And Smoggy. Good to see you again, Smoggy. And looking at the figures, we look, it's slowly increasing with the numbers watching at the moment. Well, of course, we've had a couple of interesting weeks doing the streams. On, 2 weeks ago, we had Sarah Begum from the Adventurers Club. Last week we had Ben Seal from British Canoeing discussing water access, and this week we're doing something slightly different once again. This week we are talking tonight with the, we're spreading our net wider, as I say, and talking about epilepsy, something not talked about very often in outdoor forums, and how it hasn't stopped those with the condition, balancing it and leading inspiring outdoor lives. My guests tonight are outdoors advocate Fran Churauskis and super surfer Frankie York, host of Seize Your Adventure podcast. Now, it's a multi-tool podcast which focuses on the positives of what adventures can be achieved outdoors, naturally taking into account the risks and practicalities. And good evening, ladies.
Hi, good evening.
Well, nice to have you both joining us. It's the first time we've done a three-way conversation here, which is interesting and a technical challenge all at the same time. But it's nice to be in good company with fellow podcasters as well. So we'll get to talk to you about the podcasts and obviously your various interests as well. But if possible, I'd like to start with you, Fran. I know that you started with the Camino back in 2017. I don't know if that was your first sort of long distance hike, but tell us how you started the Camino in 2017 and ended up doing a podcast.
Yes, yeah, it's quite a interesting genesis to the podcast. So basically, it was my first very long hike. I have grown up hiking and did hikes like that, but never done a through hike before. And I decided in 2017 that given the tumultuous conditions in the UK as they seemed at that time, I wanted to go to Europe for a little bit and do a little bit of a through hike over there. And obviously, when you're looking at through hikes in Europe, the Camino comes up quite high on the Google search, which is why I decided to go and do a Camino hike. So I did the Norte route, which is the one that goes right across the top coast of the country. And it was absolutely glorious hiking between the mountains and the seaside. And as anybody who knows anything about the Camino knows, you are meeting so many inspiring people when you're walking it. It's a very interesting type of hiking to do in that way, because you get a little bit of time to yourself when you're hiking, but you're meeting so many different people. And one of the things that I found when I was walking was that there are certain people along the route that everybody seems to come across or seems to meet at some point or hear about. And on my route, there were some folks like the guy that was carrying a didgeridoo, the German guy who liked to sleep under trees. And at some point during the hike, I realized that I had become one of those people that everyone was talking about, because I was walking the route solo with epilepsy. And so this was something which really surprised me, because even though I took it into consideration when I was planning the route and planning doing the journey, it wasn't something that I necessarily saw as a barrier to me doing it. And it wasn't necessarily something that I was concerned about as such. But people who were on the route with me, they quite wanted to look after me, and they wanted to learn more about epilepsy, and they wanted to hear how I came to do the route with epilepsy by myself and that kind of thing. So this was something which really surprised me, like I say. And when I came back from the Camino, I started talking about my story and my hike and writing a few blog posts about it and that kind of thing. And I started to think about why people thought that it was strange and whether I was the only person with epilepsy doing that kind of thing. And after doing a little bit of research, I realized I definitely wasn't. There's quite a lot of us out there doing adventurous things. And that was basically the start of Seizure Adventure. So I decided that all of these people who were doing exciting stuff, all of their stories needed to be told somewhere. And there wasn't a platform specifically for that. There are quite a few blogs and good epilepsy charities that tell epilepsy stories, but there wasn't anywhere that was doing this crossover between an adventure blog or an adventure podcast and an epilepsy podcast. So I thought that was a really good way to kind of spread awareness of the condition and just get in touch with people that had it.
So taking it, sort of going back slightly, you undertaking this particular trip with your level of epilepsy that you've got or had at that time, how big an undertaking was it? Obviously, people's perception that you found was quite, they were concerned, I'm guessing, or they were saying how brave you were or whatever. But in your own mind, was it, were you on the edge of your abilities, as it were, your concerns about your own health, or were you had everything under control and you felt you were more surprised at people's reaction?
Yeah, I think certainly looking back, I was possibly a little bit more naive and a little bit less concerned than I should have been. I do admit that when I went on the hike, I was 2 years seizure free at that point. And when you get to 1 year seizure free, the doctors are a little bit happier with you. You can do things like you can drive again and that kind of stuff. So by the point of 2 years, I was starting to feel quite confident in my medication, and I was very much of the opinion that my medication was working. I was much safer now that I was taking medication than I had been before my diagnosis. And therefore, for the most part, I didn't have to worry about it too much. But one of the reasons that I did the Camino as opposed to another long distance route was the fact that it is quite well walked, and you do go through quite a lot of towns and villages. So you're quite often going to be meeting people, you're going to get to know each other and that kind of thing. So I did have that safety net of other hikers around me to help if something did go wrong.
Okay.
I mean, obviously with a condition like epilepsy, you never quite know if you're going to have a seizure again. You don't have any cures for epilepsy. But at the same time, I could get into as much trouble having a seizure here in a flat as I could when
Right.
I'm out
Yeah.
walking somewhere. Because yeah, it's something that is a little bit difficult to predict and a little bit difficult to prepare for, essentially.
Yeah,
But you do
of
what you
course.
can, and I did it as
Yeah.
safely as I could.
Sure. And the other question that immediately comes to mind would be when you met other hikers on the Camino, and I know it's like it's sort of a group transforms like a caterpillar, doesn't it? It just keeps changing subtly, but you keep seeing the same people as every few days or weeks, whatever it may be. How did the conversation come out that you had it? Was it something that you were trying to keep private, and it came out because they were, you're having the heart-to-heart conversations you naturally have on the trail? Or was it something you felt safer to let somebody know that, so they were aware of it?
I quite often lead with it, and it definitely helped that I was raising a little bit of money for some epilepsy charities whilst I was doing it. That wasn't the main reason for my hike. I did the hike for me. I figured if I was doing it, I might as well try and raise a little bit of money for some charities. So I had an epilepsy awareness t-shirt on, which certainly helped to break the ice if people asked about the t-shirt and why I was hiking it. I could very easily go, well, I actually have epilepsy myself, and it's a nice in to that conversation. But I have absolutely no qualms about telling people about it. And I think that if there is the potential for me to have a seizure at any point, then it is definitely something that people around me need to be aware of,
Yeah, of
because
course.
I can't ask them to, like, I can't ask them or expect them to help me if something happened. But if they know about it, quite often people are very happy to kind of like walk with me and learn about it. So yeah.
Sure. And a bit of understanding is always a good thing, and a bit of education, I'm sure, would help them in the future. You never know when it might rear its head sometime in the future. So possibly you're helping
Yeah.
somebody else in the future as well. So let's come to the
Hopefully.
podcast then. Now, the podcast has been quite a success, I understand. And as you implied earlier on, there's hardly anybody else. I think you said there's one person in the States doing something similar, whether it's an organization or sort of a private endeavor. So who have you sort of spoken with, and have they shared the same sort of experiences that you have with when they talk to people and explain their circumstances and what they're doing?
Yeah, so you quite often get people talking about epilepsy in terms of spreading awareness of what the condition can do. But when you're talking about doing things like adventure sports, you only ever tend to hear, until seizure adventure, you only ever tend to hear adventure sports and epilepsy in the same conversation if a family member was doing an event to raise awareness for somebody they know with epilepsy and that kind of thing. Certainly, when I started to find other people with epilepsy that were doing the sports, and it was always a good mix of the different kind of adventure sports. So there was one of the first people that I found who had already told his epilepsy story and talked about it was Jared Muscat, who is actually the person who introduced me and Frankie together. So he's quite pivotal in the seizure adventure story. He had already told his story for the Patagonia website because he worked with Patagonia. And that was a really big kind of like boost to being able to share stories, essentially. And there are a couple of other people like that. We've got Alex Staniforth, who is a UK adventurer. He's attempted Everest a couple of times. He had epilepsy and seizures when he was younger, and he doesn't have to take medication anymore, so he doesn't have to worry about his epilepsy so much. But again, it's something he had to take into consideration when he was climbing Everest. I know he had to tell all his doctors and that kind of thing. But yeah, I managed to speak to people doing all different kinds of sports, some that I didn't even know really existed before I started to research people. So trail running in particular was a sport that just seemed really alien to me, this concept of actually running the type of trails that I was used to hiking. I thought hiking was difficult enough. The people that I've spoken to just are so passionate about their sport that it's, I hate to use the word inspiring, but in the case of running the podcast and speaking to other people who are so passionate about their sport, they have been inspiring for me because they have literally inspired me to do sports which I wouldn't necessarily have tried if I didn't speak to these people. Trail running in particular, we've got one of the big trail runners, Diane Van Deren, is possibly another one of the few people with epilepsy who very openly talked about her epilepsy within the context of doing her sport. And I ended up a couple of years ago now, 2019, I ended up doing my own trail race, the very first running race that I ever did. I decided to do 100 kilometers. So yeah, it's just been absolutely amazing to find people around the world and being able to speak to them and connect with them over that odd little niche of doing adventure with a condition that is very, it's a very complicated condition. Even those of us with it find it very difficult to kind of fathom exactly how it works. So it's nice to be able to talk about that side of things. But the main thing we connect over is just the passion for our respective adventure sports, essentially. So yeah, it's definitely for people that fit into that kind of middle section of a Venn diagram of epilepsy and adventure. I have had a lot of people say to me that it's been essentially a lifeline in some instances, because it's just a reassurance that they can still go out and do adventurous things, and that sometimes it might have to be adapted, but there are a lot of people out there who are still doing it.
And how many podcasts now have you got under your belt? I have listened to a few, but I couldn't quite recall when you started. So what sort of numbers are we talking about now?
So it's 2 years. I've just passed the 2 year anniversary, and you are testing me in terms of how many episodes, but I know it's over 30. I think including bonus episodes, it's coming up to the 40 mark soon as well. So yeah, it was something which initially Seizure Adventure just started out as a blog, a website, but quickly realized that I'm not really a blog reader. I quite liked writing the blog posts and getting other people to write it. But if I don't read blogs myself, I shouldn't be expecting other people to go and find the blog posts. Whereas I do listen to podcasts all the time. So I decided, why not try making one? It was very much a kind of finding my way with it as I went. Had a few like helpful tips from friends and family, but it was very much a learning from YouTube and Googling everything as I did it and that kind of thing. And yeah, finding my way with it. But I just think it is the best way to try and share stories, particularly when you're trying to show a person behind a condition, because it's something which, you know, you hear epilepsy and you think one thing, But then if you're actually speaking to someone and hearing their whole story, it kind of hopefully will make people change their minds a little bit about the condition and not be so scared about it.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Well, of course, one of the most famous people you've interviewed has happened to be Frankie York, who's joining us tonight, a super surfer from somewhere exotic. I thought she was in Spain, but unfortunately, I think she's back in the UK. So how are you doing tonight, Frankie?
I am very well, thank you. I wouldn't say I'm particularly famous, but I'm very glad to be here nonetheless.
Well, let's turn to you now, Frankie, and talk a bit about your activity, because your physical activity is obviously surfing, as I've mentioned, and how you sort of managed to manage that and cope with the practical aspects, as well as obviously enjoying the sport as well. So do tell us more about how you got into surfing and obviously the battle with balancing it with the condition.
So it's something that I did a little bit as I was younger, but very, very infrequently. And I remember loving it, but I grew up in Birmingham and no sea there, just didn't get around to it very often. And I started having seizures about 6 years ago. And the way it works with me, we have a sort of pattern where it comes in waves, ironically. But I'll have months at a time where I just have nonstop, really violent seizures. And then it'll be dormant for a while and I can sort of get on with my life. And I went traveling in, I believe, 2018 and didn't have any issues with my seizures at all, which was really, really uncommon, but very exciting, of course. And I got into surfing and I just remembered that the passion I had for it when I was younger, it was still there. It had just been dormant for whatever reason. And I got back and I started university and I just thought, I just want to surf. That I still obviously attended uni, but with uni came stress and with stress came my seizures. And because I'd only really started to get into it in that last year of traveling, it meant that I kind of had to learn to surf while still dealing with these difficult seizures. And if you were so interested into going to our podcast, I brought out my own episode on sort of the mitigation of having seizures in the water and the responsibility that other people have and safety and things like that. But it's been a real journey. And I think because I have to be so in tune with my body to know that I can surf and still be safe, it's made me appreciate, one, what I can do a lot more, and two, like how I'm able to surf, and just being in tune with the way that my brains work has really helped me improve with the sport as well. I'd say I got in contact with Fran. We were put in contact, as she mentioned, by fellow surfer Jared Muscat, as he had told his story, or his epilepsy story, on the Patagonia website. Because a couple of years ago, I again loved surfing, was in a really difficult place with my seizures, and everyone had just said, Frankie, this isn't safe. We can't support you doing this anymore because it's just terrifying for all of us involved, which I obviously completely respected. And I went out and I did a cursory Google and I thought, I can't be the only person in this position. And like Fran said, she came across so many people doing their respective sports with their seizure conditions and things like this. So I messaged him on, I found him on Instagram and I messaged him. I said, oh, I read your story. I'm also a surfer and I love it, but I'm terrified. I don't want to drown. My friends don't want me to surf. My family don't want me to surf. Have you got any advice? And bless him, he was an absolute angel. He gave me some really good words of wisdom, pointed me in the direction of various resources. And one of those resources was Fran. And from that point, I've just avidly followed whatever content she wanted to put out, and her story, again, found it really inspiring. I also hate the word. And yeah, from there, I said, do you want any help with what you're doing? Can I be of any use? And yeah, I became her little protege from there on out.
Right. Okay. And so you were put in touch with each other and found you had obviously a kindred enthusiasm for sharing the story. So have you interviewed anybody yourself as yet? Are you still sort of new to the microphone, as it were?
I have produced my own episode, and it was a mix of me telling my own story, but through the lens of some other people. So I interviewed some friends and a fellow surf instructor to get their perspectives of it and how they feel about surfing with me, because it was really important to me to remind people that it's not just my personal experience, but when I go into the water with other people, I am sort of putting a responsibility on them, as much as I wouldn't want to, or as much as I wouldn't want anyone to feel responsible for me. The fact of the matter is if I were to have a seizure in the water, they should really know what to do, because it could be a situation where they have to save my life. And my episode was all about interviewing people to get their perspective and experience with that matter.
Okay. So between the two of you then, the people that you've spoken to with obviously similar or same condition, are they, do you all share the same view on managing it and life in general? In other words, it's something to be managed so that you can enjoy your activity, as opposed to something to be scared about or worried about. I don't know which one of you want to take that.
I guess I'll take that. It's a fairly big question. I think one of the things that I in particular have found through doing the podcast is the fact that epilepsy is so different for everyone, for one thing. There are multiple different types of seizure and they present themselves in very different ways. So I had mostly the type of seizure that you would imagine when you hear the word, which is losing consciousness and convulsing and that kind of thing. But there are some people with epilepsy that have different seizures that affect their consciousness, but they'll still be able to stand and that kind of thing. They might have muscle jerks or that kind of reaction to it. So the way in which people carry on doing their sports and the way in which people kind of like have to adapt or whether they have to adapt at all very much depends on how their epilepsy is affecting them. And as Frankie said, that can be very different at different times as well. So I think a really good example of the way in adapting things is a gentleman called Kyle Parker. He was a rock climber. He is a rock climber. He does a lot of climbing. And when he started having worse seizures, rather than doing climbing with ropes and top roping, he changed to bouldering, because he can still do that, but he's not relying on anybody else or asking anybody else to take the risk for him, essentially. And I think that is something which is a constant across everyone that I've spoken to, is that we, and one of my epilepsy nurses actually said this to me as well, that we with the condition have a right to take our own risks, but we can't put other people in a position of taking risk, essentially. So yeah, everyone that I've spoken to is very much of the opinion that we really like to do our sports. We really like to go and have our respective adventures. And so with epilepsy, being stress-free is something which is very important. Stress is a very big trigger for seizures. And if going out and doing long distance hikes or going out and having a surf is going to limit the stress, then it's something which is worth the risk for a lot of us, essentially.
Well, talking of stress, obviously with the current situation with COVID, I'm sure, like all of us, you've found this, the limitations at the moment quite stressful. Has that affected either of you at all? Or have you managed to, it's not that type of stress that actually causes you problems?
COVID has been particularly difficult. Well, it hasn't been particularly difficult for me. I've been in a very fortunate position. However, I have spent the last 6 months living in Spain, and I'm hoping to be returning to Spain as soon as possible. And not being able to travel as freely as you would in normal circumstances has been quite stressful for me. I've also had a job in Spain and I had a few issues with the management that were putting me under certain amounts of stress, which did unfortunately lead to an increase in the amount of seizures I was experiencing. And to be going through that in COVID times, if you will, it was difficult, but it wasn't anything unmanageable. But Fran and I were speaking nearly a year ago now, maybe a bit less, about whether we were in this high risk vulnerable category, as because we know that COVID does have some neurological implications should you contract it, people losing their sense of taste and smell and fatigue and lots of other really weird symptoms that they don't necessarily say on the tin. And we didn't know, and it appeared that a lot of medical professionals weren't entirely sure how vulnerable we are to this and whether it would be all right if either of us contracted it. And I, touch wood, can safely say that I haven't come across it and am in the all clear, but it's something that we've both had to consider when wanting to do our respective activities or travel or what have you. But yeah.
So it's so from a protective point of view, then you've obviously got to try and keep as far away from it as you possibly can. You don't want to test it as such, do you, either of you?
No.
Yeah, I definitely say that. Okay. It's, I was going to say it's something, it's another one of those ones that, because it is a very unknown condition, everyone with epilepsy has been keeping an eye on the respective charities and doctors and things, and I still don't think there's any consensus as to whether who falls into that vulnerable category with it and that kind of thing. Well,
yeah, I suppose, I mean, to be honest, everybody, we are all still learning, aren't we, with it. That's the thing, but getting better all the time, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. But that was the stress from that was just something I was interested in knowing if it was a direct effect for you. The other thing that you sort of mentioned was what do you find the general perceptions from the outdoor community, the adventure community, about epilepsy, their awareness or their considerations for other people? I mean, it's not something, as I say, that's commonly mentioned. I've never seen it mentioned probably on any of the outdoor forums. But what's your viewpoint at the moment? And if it is sort of semi-negative, how would you like to change that?
So I, like Fran, like to lead with the fact that I do suffer with this condition, just so that everything's out in the open and it's transparent. Everyone's aware, should I have a seizure, that it's not a complete shock and what they should do in that circumstance. And on the whole, my wanting to do whatever activity it is, be it surfing, climbing, hiking, biking, everyone's so excited that I'm willing to push myself like that. They're very accommodating. I've never come across anyone that's gone, oh no, you shouldn't do that, I don't want you to come with me kind of thing. But I feel as well that it's also reflective of my own attitude. So back in the day when I was a lot more concerned about my seizures, I knew less about myself and my body and the condition as a whole. If I presented that I wanted to go and do some sort of activity and I came across as very uncertain about doing it, I'd get a lot of, are you sure this is what you want to do? Do I really want to be involved in this? Whereas if I lead with, this is what I have, we should be fine, but if not, this is what you need to do. Do you have any more questions? Are you comfortable for me going along with you? People are generally very happy to sort of take that one on and, you know, be accommodating of it. So people generally are very positive about it. I occasionally come across people that want to, not pity you, but people are like, oh, wow, this is so amazing. And I kind of have to stop and say, no, I am completely normal and capable of all of these things, but it's just something that we need to be taking into consideration here.
I'd very much second that. I think in terms of individuals that you meet and you do stuff with them, pretty much everyone just takes in their stride and goes, oh, okay, cool. What do we need to know? Sweet, let's crack on with it. But when it comes to things that are slightly more organized, I've definitely seen some issues with it. Essentially, there's been a couple of times when I've signed up for an event, the trail race that I was talking about, in fact, when I told them that I had epilepsy and I asked them if they wanted any more information or they wanted me to kind of like write a blog for them or anything like that, I got a very panicked response from them asking me to make sure that I was running with someone, making sure that I, like, they gave me this little care plan in terms of you should run with someone. These are where the checkpoints are. We don't think that's going to be enough for you to, if something were to happen, they're quite far away from each other and all of this kind of thing. So I think individuals are very accepting of it, but perhaps understandably, because they have a bigger picture to look at. As soon as you are looking at organized events, it can get a bit tricky. It can get a little bit red tapey. And well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Health and safety. I suppose health and safety has changed it for everyone.
Yeah, that's it. And the difficulty comes where I've known people who therefore hide the fact they have epilepsy because they're worried that they're going to be told no. And this is where the problems come. Like Frankie says, we're very open with it. And since we've started talking and started doing Seizure Adventure, I've had other people say to me that they now lead with it. They now tell people, they make sure they're always telling people if they're doing organized races or organized events, but they hadn't in the past because they've either been told no in the past or they were worried that they'd be told no. So things are definitely changing. I think in general, the perception of epilepsy in society is changing. I think that's probably true of a lot of conditions. But yeah, it's certainly 50-50. Individuals are always great, but it can get a bit tricky, like you say, with red tape and health and safety. So...
Yeah. Well, I was looking up some data for the conversation, and if it's correct, it was implying that 1 in 105 people in the UK have got it, or in Britain rather, and it's slightly less in Scotland. But anyway, folks, I hope you're enjoying the conversation. Obviously, it's a bit different to the normal outdoors activities and topics that we sometimes touch on. But if you've got any comments, please do put them into the chat room, either in Facebook or on YouTube. Any supportive comments? I'm sure the girls would love to get some feedback from your perceptions or your thoughts on it. And if you have any specific questions, then do jot them down there as well. If you could start it with a capital Q, it just makes it easier to spot. The one question that has propped up, but I won't put it up on the screen at the moment, Fran, that was for you, was did you do the Camino trip for religious reasons or for outdoor reasons?
Oh, it wasn't religious reasons, although my grandmother was very religious and she was Catholic and stuff. So there were certain aspects of doing it that were quite nice to feel a little bit connected to her at times, which I wasn't expecting when I went, essentially. It was mostly for the physical reasons and the outdoor reasons and the being in the mountains and the cultural reasons was one of the main ones for me. I wanted to explore Spain a little bit more. I had, a great time just being able to walk between the different towns and seeing the different regions of Spain. That was definitely one of the biggest things for me. It wasn't specifically a religious reason, but I think as a lot of people who have walked it know, if you are secular, there is something that is quite profound in doing a pilgrimage like that. So,
I must admit, I'd love to do the Camino. It's something I've read several books, and it just strikes me as a nice balance between a bit of physical activity and the sort of social, semi-spiritual reward that you get from it. How long did it take you to do it?
So it was about a month of actual walking, but I did take some rest days in because it was actually my boyfriend's birthday and my sister's birthday during the time that I was walking. So they actually came out so that we could have a little birthday celebration whilst I was out there. So it was a couple of mini holidays within the actual hike. So I was out there for about 6 weeks in total. Did a little bit of walking afterwards and that kind of thing. But the actual hiking took about a month of hiking.
And did you have a lovely feeling of a spiritual quietness when you finished? Were you sort of settled in your mind, or were you just anxious to get back to work or whatever it is you were doing at the time?
Oh, I was so much more unsettled after I finished it. There is a whole story behind it, but it was one of those where I went out there hoping to get answers and came back with a lot more questions, essentially. but one thing that it really did help was, and again, this is something that you'll hear from quite a lot of people with any kind of chronic condition, you get to not trust your body at times, particularly with something like epilepsy, where you can have a feeling that your body has betrayed you and that kind of stuff. So to be able to do something really physical, to be able to trust my body to get me from one side of the country to another, that was something which was very, very reaffirming, shall we say. That was something that, yeah, definitely came back.
That was the biggest reward you received from it, yeah?
Yeah. Definitely, yeah, definitely.
Okay, lovely. Okay, folks, as I say, do, if you've got any more questions or whatever, drop them in the chat. I can see one or two are coming in at the moment, which we'll come to in a second. I hope you're enjoying this evening's conversation. It's very nice that the Frankie and Fran have joined us and taken time out of their schedule as well to share the news. And also we'll put some links in towards the end about where you can pick up the podcast and more information on their social media. Next week, we have another interview coming, which I'm hoping many people will be quite excited. And so, yes, Chris Townsend is joining us next week, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with him. So if you have any specific questions you'd like to put to him in advance, then please do drop me a line in all or any of the various ways that you can get hold of the Outdoor Station, and I'll put them to one side to make sure that I ask Chris. But I saw him on another interview a few weeks back, and he was full of fascinating stories and information. So I'm looking forward to adding to his experience and knowledge and sharing some of his news. So what I'd like to do, I've got a couple of questions coming in. Let me just see if we can fire them into the system. Okay, so you answered the religious one. This is for, I think, where are we? No, not that one. It is that one. From Mark Jan, who's a regular watcher. Thank you for joining in once again, Mark, and thanks for the question. What can we do as a coach, leader, paddle sports? He obviously teaches paddle sports to improve people with epilepsy to encourage to do the sport. What do we need to take into consideration? Perhaps both of you need to look at that question.
Yeah, I'll take it to begin with, and I will just plug a particular episode of our podcast, which is Adventurers on Epilepsy. And that's where I actually spoke to people like yourself that do lead in adventure sports and got that side of things. And that was quite a good way to be able to answer specific questions that they had. But I think the main, well, there's two main things. There is epilepsy education. That's not quite the right way of saying that. There's epilepsy awareness courses that you can do, and they're various different levels of it. So I would say go to one of the epilepsy charities. Epilepsy Action is quite a good one if you do want to do a specific epilepsy awareness course. But the main thing would be to just kind of like ask people, give people the space to tell you what they need. I know that quite a lot of people that run sports, particularly if you are doing one-to-one, you will have, again, that health and safety form of is there anything that I need to know? So do just kind of like follow up on that and ask for specifics, because as I said, there are many different kinds of epilepsy and seizure, so some people might need more accommodation than others, essentially.
And yourself, Frankie, as you're a water sports person?
I would 100% agree with everything Fran just said. Make sure you know everything you need to know from that particular person and make sure you can accommodate them in the best way possible, whether that means one-to-one, extra mentoring, that kind of thing. But it's, if people are willing to volunteer that information, then it means that they're definitely into sort of doing that sport. And as Fran said, there's adaptive courses and awareness courses you can go on. And as long as you've sort of filled in your risk assessment form and you've thought about all the possible scenarios that this could put you in, then it generally is all right.
Okay, okay. The other one that just popped up there as I was pressing the buttons. Question for Frankie, are you feeling more safer in the UK or Spain? I presume generally about medication, I guess?
Well, I don't take medication for my condition just because it didn't work out with me very well. So I have sort of alternative things going on as far as that's concerned. So again, that does make traveling for me a lot more accessible than other people. I speak fluent Spanish, so I don't ever have an issue with communication. Should I ever have a seizure, I know that I can communicate in whatever language required if needs be. So I wouldn't say it's a matter of feeling safer, but what I will say is the life I live in Spain is a lot less stressful than the life I lead in the UK. And therefore, I do find that I can go about my day doing my activities, surfing, working, what have you, in a much more slow manner. And that does mean that I feel less at risk of having a seizure the majority of the time. I also, as well, I think the warm weather helps. I'm one of those people that if I'm warm and I've got a bit of vitamin D in my system, I'm doing physically and mentally so much better than if I'm in the UK and it's grey and raining.
Yeah, that I can fully understand, certainly. Well, thanks for your question there, Martin. We've got one from Martha from Canada. And Martha is asking, have either of you found that your advocacy around adventuring with epilepsy has cross-pollinated to advocating with other folks with other conditions? So I presume sharing the enthusiasm to manage things and be positive as opposed to be negative?
I would say that on social media, there's a whole community of people with various disabilities or chronic conditions, and they share their experiences of trying out whatever sports or following like whatever desire they so have, and it is very well documented. And in that sense, yeah, I've come across a lot of people and sort of cross-pollinated, if you will, which is really, it's really lovely. But I also find that through telling my story, I've heard a lot of people come to me, they say, oh, I've got this, I've got that, and I'm really into this or that, and can you give me any advice? And I found that it's a really nice way to connect with people, and it's really nice to see people be able to do things that they didn't necessarily consider possible before. So, yeah, essentially. Fran?
Yeah, I'd definitely say that there is something that resonates with people when you're talking about the difficulties that you come across. It resonates a little bit, and certainly for me, with doing the podcast and doing all of the social media and doing all of the research to find people with epilepsy, I have come across so many other incredible people that do have different conditions. So I would say, in particular, there's some organisations that I'm aware of that I wouldn't necessarily have been aware of if I didn't do my own advocacy. So Outdoor Mindset, I think we've mentioned already, they are a organisation in Colorado that advocate for outdoor sports for anyone with any kind of neurological condition, so not specifically epilepsy. And obviously all neurological conditions they can sometimes have similar effects. So that's quite a nice way to obviously sharing similar stories and similar experiences. Things like Disabled Hikers, Instagram account, that's another one which I found via my research, which I wouldn't necessarily have found without doing my own advocacy. And yeah, there's certainly quite a few individuals that I've either met after doing talks or that I have met via social media who have conditions that I have no idea how it is for them living with those conditions, but certainly we can kind of
help each other,
console each other, help each other,
inspire each other, just to give each other confidence to do it. I think is a great experience, great benefit, and congratulations for you for doing so. Now, I'm just wondering whether it would be useful just to touch on the actual what to do should you come across somebody that is having a seizure or tells you they have epilepsy. I know we've got a couple of slides here that perhaps might help. Would one of you like to just talk it through and explain to anybody that might be watching this that has heard the name but actually doesn't really know what to do next, as it were? Should somebody have a mild seizure?
Yeah, I'll absolutely go ahead. So as we spoke about a little bit before, there's so many different types of seizures and epilepsy and things like that. So it can be quite difficult to recognize sometimes, but the classic seizure or the tonic-clonic seizure with people on the floor, convulsing, shaking, foaming at the mouth, that kind of thing. And that I would say that that's the one that people would be more afraid of, if you will. But the first and most important thing is don't panic. Because if you're running around like a headless chicken, you're absolutely no use to the person that is experiencing their seizure. So you just got to take a few deep breaths and think about what you want to do. So the best thing to do is to start timing to see how long that person is having a seizure. Because you might be asked for this if any first response comes, or if they themselves are documenting their own seizures. When they come around, they might say, oh, did you time it? And then it would be obviously very useful if you had done so. And you also don't ever want to restrain them. So if their limbs are flying around, if they're shaking on the floor, you just want to step back. And if their head is sort of going to hit anything, it's if you have a jumper or a pillow or a blanket, if you can put that under them to make sure that their head is a bit more secure, that is ideal. But if not, again, just don't touch them. And sort of remove any dangerous objects from their immediate vicinity, chairs, tables, camping knives, who knows where you are or what's happening. But again, if there's any immediate risk, try to mitigate that one. Don't leave, of course. So if they've come round and they say, oh, X, Y, and Z, I have epilepsy, this, that, and the other, don't think, oh, they're fine and go about your business. I'd stay with them for half an hour, to see what their aftercare requirements are and how you can be of service. And then this one, do phone. So phone either their emergency contact details if they're sort of available to you, or if you know that it's their first seizure, if you know that they're not affected by this usually, then you're going to want to phone an ambulance. And if the seizure goes on for more than 5 minutes, that could be very, very dangerous, as they have no oxygen to their brain. And again, you're going to want to call an ambulance or first response to come and help you out with that situation.
So really, that ICE, the in case of emergency number, it's best to do as you girls do, is and tell somebody that you're with that if it happens, this is what you need to do. So that it removes the shock factor, I guess, from them, which is important.
I would just point out that a lot of people, myself included, although I haven't got it on at the moment, I will admit, I usually wear a bracelet on my left wrist that has my name, date of birth, any medication that I am on, be it for my seizures or for something else, and the condition that I have and sort of what to do. Because there was a time where I used to have sort of emergency injections with me to mitigate the seizures I was having or to bring control of my body back to my brain. And the instructions for there used to be on it. And it's worth just having a look to see if they do carry any jewelry that might give you a better indication of what to do in that scenario.
Cool. Cool. Excellent. Okay. Well, I think we've touched on most things. I believe the only final thing is really we've touched on the podcast, some of the experiences that you've had, some of the people you've spoken to and their experiences. We've dipped a little bit into epilepsy and obviously what we've just discovered being what happened should you be in somebody's company that's having a seizure. The only question is really is what's next for you guys? Because obviously you're teaming up now and you're co-hosting the podcast. Where are you taking it? What's the global plan?
Well, this year's and the last year have obviously been very difficult for everyone regarding what comes next, because everyone's plans have essentially been scuppered. But it's been quite nice because we were talking the other day about how we've been able to rediscover adventuring within parameters that are a lot closer to home and find out what kind of exploring we can do in our own vicinity, which is really, really nice. And for me personally, I'm undertaking a new video project. It's a series that's going to be coming out on our Seizure Adventure YouTube channel in the next couple of months. So that's been keeping me busy over the last couple of months of lockdown and not lockdown and things like that. So that's what people should keep their eyes peeled for from my end. And then Fran?
Yeah, so we've got a new series of Seizure Adventure coming up. So it's going to be a multi-platform one now. So Frankie's going to be doing the YouTube channel mostly, and the new series of Seizure Adventure is going to start in the end of March. And it's going to have a slightly different sound to it as well. So previously we've done some storytelling episodes and then some simple Q&As and that kind of thing. And there's a couple of episodes that have been very, very labor intensive, like Frankie's one, and some that I did in the first season with big storytelling and lots of interviews and that kind of thing. This season is being pared back quite a lot, and we're essentially going to be starting a little mini it's like a blog club. So it's like a book club, but on blog posts. And I'm going to be getting, I've been doing lots of research and getting some really good blog posts from people that have already written them. They're on other platforms or on other adventure or epilepsy blogs. They'll be read out on the podcast, and then we'll be talking about them a little bit. And hopefully that'll be a nice way to get people a little bit more involved as well.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, we look forward to that. We've had a few people ask where they can find out more about you. So it just so happens I've got a graphic here that will tell them. So you can find Seizure Adventure on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course on the website. And as Frankie's just saying, also on the YouTube channel. You can also follow us if you're not doing so already, but you found us, so you must be following us. And if you could sign up for our newsletter, that would be great. And of course, there are 536 podcasts, or 537 if this one goes out, in the library going back 15 years, slightly longer than Fran, but you know, we've been knocking around a bit. And then of course we wanted to say thanks to everybody that does support the channel and the members, the podcast listeners, and of course you, the live stream viewers, and especially the people that have actually dipped a hand in their pocket and made a small donation. So thank you very much indeed for that. Well, I don't think there's anything else we need to touch on, is there, ladies? Is there anything I've forgotten or missed out at all?
No,
I don't think so.
That's it, then. Better put the kettle on in that case. Sounds good. Right then. Well, Francesca and Frankie, thank you very much indeed for your time this evening. It's been nice to talk to you and good to hear more about your plans and what you're doing with the podcast. So I wish you the best of luck with it. And I'm hoping that this will help expand your audience and the awareness a bit more as well.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. Great.
Okay. No worries. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.